Welcome to A Guide to Art, Activism, and Culture. I'm your host, Zoe Elena Moldenhauer. This podcast is brought to you by the Aerogram Center for Arts and Culture, where we delve into social issues seen in museums and in art collections today. Today's topic, Latinidad or Trojan Horse. Joining me is Carlos Jesus Martinez Dominguez, a Caribbean New Yorker, parent, atheist on some days, educator, Dominican Puerto Rican, interdisciplinary artist, born on a military base in North Carolina in 1976. Carlos' work can be seen at the Hispanic Society of America in partnership with the Northern Manhattan Arts Alliance and HBO until August 14, 2021, and is an educator at El Museo in New York.
Carlos, thank you for joining me. We're really excited to have you on our podcast. Can you introduce yourself?
Thank you, Zoe. I'm really honored to be here as part of the podcast. My name's Carlos. I go by Carlos Jesus Martinez Dominguez, and believe it or not, three more names, Figs, Figaro, and Fairo. And they're all kind of a critique on where I come from and the cultures that make me up and blah, blah, blah. I'm an artist and an educator. I have a GED, so I don't necessarily come from a place of formal education. I've been given a wonderful opportunity that I think more people should be given to work in institutions without having that formal education, but having a lot to offer in terms of lived experience and also exhibiting work and being out in the community that I serve. I don't know how else to really, introduce myself. I think I try to advocate for different things, but maybe it'll unfold in the conversation.
And you're also an educator in the El Museo in New York City.
Yeah, it might be more relevant to say this, even though I'm a little show-offy sometimes. I'm very proud of the fact that I'm part of the permanent collection of El Museo del Barrio. So I work there, but I started off my relationship with them with 10 years ago, to be exact, actually, in their 2011 S-Files biennial. And then a piece of mine that was in that show was acquired by the museum. So it was the first kind of collection, especially a museum collection, that I joined. That might be relevant to the conversation we're having.
And today we're going to be specifically talking about the Cheech Marin collection that is currently being constructed by the Riverside Museum. And you brought this up to me when we were talking about collections, who are the people who are deciding what gets collected. You'd also talked about the terminology of Latino, Latinx, Chicano art, and now the wave for museums to catch up with diversity.
You hit it right on the head, the terminology we're using. So many of the times, not that I have a lot of experience in it, but, grant writing, trying to get support for certain things. We use these catchwords. We use Latinx or Latino or Latin American and so on. And we find ourselves, unfortunately, through George Floyd. I mean, if we can look at, the recent incarnation of this push to be more inclusive, right? And to pay attention to equity, to women's art, to queer art, to catchwords like Latino art, right? Which in that way, it becomes a lot more foggy. You know what I mean? Like sometimes, I flippantly joke that adding more Latinidad to your collection or to your education staff could result in a bunch of blonde Argentinian women that, speak Spanish and are blue-eyed, right? So, are we really escaping this, colonial mindset, this white supremacy by adhering to words like Latinidad? You say Latinidad and I hear white supremacy. So if a museum is going to put together a show being like, we're going to honor, Latinidad, like the Guggenheim did a few years ago under the Latin Sun, I think it was. I might be butchering the name of the show. Mm-hmm. And I go there and, I see Argentinian, Northern Mexican, Uruguay, Colombia, and not one Dominican artist in New York City with a population of over, close to a million Dominicans. And then, a few Puerto Ricans, I'm not really seeing. And then, then if we break it down even further, how much of these artists are people of color? How much of them are indigenous? How much of them are Black? You know what I mean? Maybe I can talk a little bit about myself. I was born in North Carolina to a Dominican mother and a Puerto Rican father. And I catch myself, making a long story short, growing up in San Diego, you know what I mean? On a military base. For those that know, you know, it was Camp Pendleton in San Diego, California. And I remember thinking about identity. Now I'm going down the road of just talking about the specific word, but I think it'll link to elections. Yeah. Through learning about herbivores and carnivores at school, I found out I wasn't white. I mean, I was so young. These are things you don't really think about unless you're put in a specific situation where you stick out or something. I remember that day, you know, thinking about me not being white and there being a difference between us, the kids at school that decided to play tag and separate the kids through pretty much like phenotype or like hair color, pretty much. That was what they were concentrating on. But I just remember being chased by a sea of brown and blonde haired kids. You know, and it was me and like, I don't know if they were Mexican. They might have been El Salvadorian, you know what I mean? But from what I remember as a kid, it was like me, four Mexicans and two black kids being chased around. And I remember from that day on thinking I was Mexican until my mother informed me I wasn't Mexican. I was growing up in a Mexican rich environment, a Chicano environment, you know, where the majority was that. Nowadays, I hear a lot of push specifically from the Chicano environment for more inclusivity in arts. The thing is that I'm looking in the prism of what people call Latinidad and a Latin quote unquote art world. And I'm seeing that not within the scope of what I'm looking at, not needing more of a voice. I want to see more Guatemalan art. I want to see more, you know, art from Haiti. I want to see more art from these other places that aren't getting recognition. So, you know, turning it to now the conversation about Cheech Marin and his collection, which I understand is mostly a Chicano collection. And I'm seeing institutions like El Museo del Barrio have to change their focus from a Puerto Rican institution to now looking at this incredibly large ocean of what they call Latinidad. And even they are confused, right? They're using, you know, Latin American, Caribbean, you know, like they need to put out a bunch of words to cover. And meanwhile, you know, I would argue they don't have the budget to cover this. You know what I'm saying? Like it's a small institution. So in a way they're biting off more than they can chew. But you have an institution like the Riverside Museum being, you know, started with the cornerstone of Chicano art in a Chicano area. Is that really serving Latinidad, or is it serving a group that has 65 million residents in this country? You know what I'm saying? Like, and a very strong cultural, institutional backbone in this country. And what I mean by that is look around at who's the director of museums or, you know, the director of the Smithsonian, you know, Latino Center. We're going to see, and for good reason, by the way, you know, I hate this doesn't come off as xenophobic somewhat. Chicanos have been in this country for a very long time. Matter of fact, half of this country used to be Mexico, right? So like, you know, and they've been in academia for longer than a lot of other groups do. But along with that comes a certain privilege that we are very easily able to identify when it comes to white privilege.
Yeah. And you mentioned the directors, like the people who are kind of constructing, you know, the art narrative. And I just want to like take a sidestep a little bit. So Alfred Barr was the first director of the MoMA. And in doing some research, MoMA has a Latin American collection. In constructing this idea of Latin American art in the United States, he had created this fund sending people to Latin America who focused more on Mexico because there was like a connection between Mexico and Europe that you had a lot of artists that were going back and forth that kind of excluded the conversation. I think as you were saying, like the Chicana art is more dominant, or so like the associations that we have, like Latinidad is like the default of being Mexico.
And that has to do with the rest of Latin America. Most of Latin America, if we're going to use that term, whatever, just understand I don't like it. But if we're going to use the term Latin America, most of Latin America grew up on looking at Mexican culture through TV, El Chavo de Ocho, Cantinflas, you know what I mean? Like I learned about Santa Ana in school. I visited places in Texas when I was younger where, you know, where are you from? I'm Dominican. Where in Mexico is that? You know what I mean? Like it's like this side note, you know what I'm saying? So I would like to like expand the conversation. And I don't think that the conversation is really being expanded. You know what I mean? Like, because we keep using these catchwords that aren't. I want to see more Mexican art from Veracruz. I want to see some Black Mexican art. You know, I'm tired of Frida.
So I guess for me, not using the Latin American catchword, what word would you use?
Well, that's when we get into specification. You know, I'm an educator. I make art about what I edumacate about. So I use funny terms that I think I try to get across the message. So for instance, I call, you know, United States people, United Statesians, because I kind of like, don't like the fact that they kind of bogart the term American, even though Vespucci Americo or whatever, like named this stuff after himself, pretty much. And me, myself, I'm always asked that question after I go through this kind of rant about the word Latin, you know, Latinx or Latinidad or whatever. And they ask, well, then what do you use? You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, you know, I joke that, you know, I call myself Carlos, but I'm comfortable with Caribbean, United Statesian. And I'm being silly, but I think I get the point across, right? Like the Caribbean's already in the Americas. And you know, I'm a product of growing up in the United States and being born in the United States. I think there's some specificity there because the Caribbean is a region. And yes, you know, Mexico, Colombia, and all of that have regions of their country that belong to that. And they are more Afro-descendant, right? Because there's a history of Black people being pushed to the margins of their country, normally to the oceans. So when we go to these countries, we're going to see much more of a Caribbean vibe, much more of a Caribbean culture, where you'll see the musics have similar beats to the Caribbean. You know, I see the much stronger similarities in terms of me identifying as a Caribbean person. Another way that I phrase it is Spanish and to unify through language, which I think is somewhat silly, especially when you think about how we were given these languages. But a lot of us are comfortable identifying through language. So if that's the case, and that's what you understand, I use the term Spanish imposed. I don't expect people to take those seriously. I expect serious people that do this ethnographic professoral work and all that to come up with a better term for us to argue about and maybe adopt. You know what I'm saying? But it definitely is not Latinidad.
So the El Museo started off as a Puerto Rican-centered museum, has now expanded, focusing on one demographic, close out the conversation. And now that they've opened up their mission to include all people from Latin America. And now you have the Puerto Rican community whose origins kind of came with the museum, now feel like that's sort of a betrayal to the original mission. Do you see something similar happening sort of to the Cheech Marin?
I could definitely see that because it's, you know, it's happened a lot. I mean, just to specify too, Jack Agüero was the first director of El Museo to open it up to other nationalities and peoples. And supposedly the story goes, it was actually to Argentinians that, you know, always been around New York in terms of the arts because mm-hmm. of what I'm talking about. You know what I mean? Bauhaus and all that, you know, like history and whatever. But it's interesting to me that it wasn't another group that had a large demographic in New York. In a way, and you know, I'm not accusing Jack Agüero, may he rest in peace, in doing that. But the thing is, you know, my mind automatically goes to the fact that we like to align ourselves with whiteness or to what's most popular, what we look up to. And I think there's a lot of, you know, that power of that artistic canon, so to speak, being so relevant, right? Like if I can just give some anecdotal little story, one of our major collectors in the Dominican Republic, Juan Luis Guerra, supposedly, right? Like the musician, he collects art and supposedly he doesn't collect Dominican art. He collects Mexican art. He's a Dominican dude. And like, he's been asked, why doesn't he collect more Dominican art? And he claims that Dominican art isn't at the same level. That we haven't gotten to that same level. I see in Latinidad the same kind of thought process. You know what I'm saying? Like, once again, thinking about it within its own bubble, that certain groups haven't risen to the standards of having an art history that encompasses a Diego Rivera, the muralism movement, the Frida Kahlos, the going back to Aztec and Mayan times in terms of art and artifacts and all of that, that I really do look up to, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we're not using equity in a way, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like we're not using equity to really view the art through different lenses and not only what the canon tells us is to be respected. You know, you understand what I mean? Maybe Frida Kahlo and these Mexican artists were getting that from the European art world at their time. And maybe that still is even going on. But within the bubble, and I keep calling it a bubble, but it's not a bubble. It's huge. You know what I mean? It's a big bubble of art and museum and education that I transverse. That's the case, or that's what I see as the case, right? That that certain people's art isn't elevated to that level because of whatever criteria isn't being met.
Right, the dangers of comparing other cultures' art to that of high European art.
You know, I've always viewed the subject or the theme in general, like, you know, a lot of what I've seen working for the last 10 years in New York, but also paying attention to the country in general, like what they're doing in LA and stuff like that. But I'm not going to claim to know too much about that. I'm here. And it's like, you know, we elevate Argentinian art. We fetishize Cuban art, even though they have a history of putting a lot of, you know, resources into their art. You know what I mean? So I wish the Dominican Republic kept their art in, you know, temperature controlled rooms in their museums. Unfortunately, there's other issues. But, you know, once again, I'm kind of talking about what's going on here in New York. And for a place with a million Dominicans and a very, very healthy dose of students, art students specifically, coming from the Dominican Republic, specifically to Parsons and other schools, you know, and us not getting that like equivalent attention or display in the art world, I think is problematic, you know?
You've raised a point about who was doing the collecting, what was being shown, what, you know, what artwork is being bought. Riverside Assembly member Jose Media said Latinos have been overlooked in the arts. The Cheech will help bring real stories and rich history of the Latino community to all Californians.
It's a true and deceiving statement to a certain degree. It is Latino art, if you're going to classify Latinidad like most people do, right, and use it. It's Latino art, it's Latinx art, right? Is it going to show the full breadth of Latinidad? Or is it just going to stay to a certain section of Latinidad, a major group of the United States, that being Chicano and people of Mexican descent? I see a lot of it happen even here in New York, like the last Smithsonian Printing the Revolution was the show about, you know, Chicano printmaking in the United States. I have a couple of friends that are Dominican. That portfolio was added to it, right? Because there is a history. For instance, my boy Pepe Coronado was trained under Sam Coronado, no relation, but he was a very famous, legendary printmaker in Austin, Texas, right? So, you know, here's this Dominican dude from Dominican Republic, and he has this part in this Chicano printmaking movement, right? That kind of like encompasses lots of other people. Once again, that's sometimes how I see us in general added into white subjects though. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a sprinkling of people. Like for instance, I know this badass, you know, I think he was El Salvadorian, coño. I might be wrong, but yeah, I'm pretty sure he's El Salvadorian. He's from Chicago, Carlos Barrera, really, really dope printmaker. And by looking at his prints, I can learn all about Mexican and Chicano history. I don't know nothing about El Salvadorian history through his prints, right? Everything is like a Pancho Villa or, you know what I'm saying? Like this and that. And, you know, I think he's a product of growing up in a Mexican rich environment where sometimes your own identity gets a little drowned out. You're not the one in a sea of, you know, it's like being Dominican 30 years or 40 years ago in East Harlem, where you were around a bunch of Puerto Ricans, you're the only Dominican, and they're like, Puerto Rico, you're like, oh, Dior, you're the only one. So you kind of adapt to everything else around you. You know what I mean? Whether it's like just natural, malicious, whatever it may be, it happens. You kind of adapt. You know, those stories get minimized. You know what I mean? So yeah, I think we need to do a better job. I mean, look, it's hard to talk about individuality all the time, right? Like we're all individuals, but I think we need to do a better job at specification, right? And really spreading the wealth, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? And what I mean by being specific is instead of being like, you know, if you're talking about opening a museum that's mostly going to be catered to a Chicano, you know, clientele in terms of funding, in terms of, you know, the demographics of the area, in terms of the collection, all of that stuff, then maybe you're being more, you know, genuine saying that this is a Chicano museum instead of calling it a Latino museum, because you're using these catchwords to kind of say that you're diverse when in a way you're not. Now, do I think that there should be more institutions that just concentrate on Chicano art? Yes, that's not what I'm, you know what I mean? Like, yes, there should be. It's just that, you know, I also think that there should be attention paid to other groups. You know what I mean? Like specifically, once again, saying, you know, we can't always pay attention to the individual, but what about these smaller communities and paying them homage? You know what I'm saying?
And you use the phrase, I know the conversation of these catchwords being a Trojan horse, you know, when it comes to history, race or gender, that it ends up doing more harm in the long run. In your experience working at El Museo, have you seen any changes over the years that you've been working there to the community that lives in that neighborhood?
Yes and no. I mean, look, I have a love-hate relationship with El Museo. I work there at the moment. You know, I'm going to be a little ginger on how I talk about it, gingerly. But I can make some other comments that you can actually directly correlate with some of the things that are happening at El Museo and other institutions, right? So for instance, if I were to tell you, there's only like two Puerto Rican restaurants in East Harlem. And somebody goes, what are you talking about? There's mad Latino food in East Harlem. And I go, I said, there's no Puerto Rican food in East Harlem. There's no restaurants left. There's plenty of Dominican restaurants and there's plenty of Mexican restaurants, but there's no Puerto Rican restaurants. It's a way to get around it. I made the joke earlier about like, yo, our staff is all Latino. And then you look at the staff and they're all blonde and blue eyed and speaking like this. Is that really diversity? Is that diversity? Is that really different from MoMA? Because you have white women from the Midwest teaching people and we have white women from Chile teaching people that are there because they can afford to do an unpaid internship and they're not taking people from the neighborhood that, you know, can't afford being in an unpaid internship because they need to work two jobs or whatever, whatever. You know, we've all heard these stories. They're real stories. You know what I'm saying? But who gets the opportunity? So I think that, you know, thank you for reminding me of that because we use it as some kind of defense. I'm not racist. I'm Dominican. What does your nationality have to do with your color and race and religion and all of that? We use it as this Trojan horse to kind of like exhibit diversity. You know what I mean? Like, we're not that, we're Latino. Meanwhile, the countries we come from can be just as racist or have a longer history of racism. Univision and Telemundo are way more white than some of the main network English-speaking channels I look at. Well, I don't look at them, but, you know, I observe enough. They're whiter. I just see a lot of the same things going on just translated to our issues. Mm-hmm. You know, the same things we complain about in terms of the larger art world, I see happening in this bubble that we're kind of interested in, right? You know, you're at the Hispanic Society, for instance, at the moment. You know, I've always been interested, never really had the opportunity too much to learn that much about the collection and all that. But I know that, you know, some of the collection is problematic and some people don't understand the mission of it, right? So I'm ready to kind of give the Hispanic Society more of a break than I am MoMA or El Museo or any of these other places, because sometimes people don't understand these catchphrases, right? Or these terms, so to speak. So Hispanic Society, back in the days when the Dominican community started getting larger in Washington Heights, started in the 60s, but really in the 90s, 80s really, started to explode in Washington Heights. And we started to become the majority in terms of the demographic up here. Some of the activists in the neighborhood pinpointed the Hispanic Society and they were like, we want inclusion. This place is called the Hispanic Society, right? Which I think is hilarious because to me, I've never really identified with that word after I understood what it meant, right? Like I rejected it being like, I'm Dominican and Puerto Rican. That doesn't mean me. But to a lot of people that, you know, the word Hispanic is, you know, you're part of this subgroup, you know what I mean? Like under our colonial parents, right? And therefore you deserve being included in this museum. At the moment, you know, they have a want, and I will once again bring it back to George Floyd and this renewed movement to kind of bring equity into our everyday lives again, right? And I say new movement because this is going on. It's in cycles, right? Something always inflames us and we start it again and again and again. But what I have noticed recently, especially with like Black Panther and all that, is we're talking about this in the arts. The Hispanic society was never a place that I really thought I belonged in, but I have a suspicion now with this movement or this accountability being held towards institutions, and this institution, even though it has a reach outside of this community, like they lend pieces to museums across the country and stuff like that, you know, and blah, blah, blah. I suspect that now they, you know, because of the way, you know, the wind is blowing, they want to have more inclusion in the neighborhood, right? In terms of their public programs and so on. So I don't know what that's going to mean. Is it going to mean that they're going to expand their collection to include more artists from different races that can technically fit in their overall mission? Like there has been Black and Indigenous artists in these colonies that made work. Is that going to be the push? Or, you know, I don't know. It's an open-ended question I'm asking. It's one of the perfect ones, but they weren't started in the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it was a white dude that was like, yo, I like Iberian and you know, Peninsula, blah, blah, blah art. You know what I mean? Like it had nothing to do with Dominicans and all that stuff. You know what I'm saying? Now, a lot of these other institutions like Studio Museum and CCADI and El Museo del Barrio and a lot of other institutions were specifically started through the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. They were started through the movements in the 60s and the 70s to give voice to communities that didn't have these voices. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's an extra slap on the face that they would go the way of, you know, sometimes whiteness or elitism. Because we also have the same criticisms on Studio Museum of Harlem being a recycling bin for Yale artists in terms of residencies and all that.
You know, no, it's definitely helpful because the founder of the Hispanic Society was a white male and he was able to travel and he had this mission that he was going to collect literature, artwork of Spanish history and culture. And some of that did include art from the colonized territories in Latin America. And now I'm kind of curious because the Cheech Martin collection, you know, is Cheech's own collection. He is privileged. He is a celebrity. Do you think that the collection could have an aspect that follow in the same category that the Hispanic Society is?
So before I say what I'm going to say, let me make a statement about myself. I'm Dominican and I'm Puerto Rican, and I view myself as a light-skinned, privileged, within the context of Dominican Republic, white enough man. Chicanos, especially Chicanos at the stature that he's at, represent the white man in the world I'm talking about, even though we can definitely point towards the Bauhaus movement and Argentina and actual white Latinidad, you know what I mean? But I'm talking about in terms of power, in terms of population, in terms of stories being told, you know what I mean? Like, and being heard. I don't think that we're clamoring and missing seeing a Mexican film director getting an award. I've seen that happen a couple of times in the last couple of years. I see representation. And overall, in terms of internationally, nationally, yeah, I'm not saying they don't need any more representation. What I'm saying is you are somewhat profiting off of a larger community. And my question is, are you going to be fair to the larger community, or will this be a Chicano art museum? Mm-hmm. If it is a Chicano art museum, by you profiting off of this larger community, I'm saying that you're using the words like Latino, right? Like there's specific money out there being like shelved for Latino stuff. You know what I mean? Whether it's the Mellon Foundation or the Ford Foundation, they earmark money. They're like, we want to give this shit out, right? Who are we going to give it to? Well, these are for the Blacks. These are for the, you know, like I'm being derogatory because this is the way that I think this thought process like goes out. But like, these are the people we're going to give this to. And if there's money earmarked for that, like, you know, is it going to Latinidad? Is it going to, you know, El Salvadorian community in Washington, D.C.? Is it going to, you know, Garifunas from Honduras in the Bronx? Or is it just going to, you know, the places that we think about the center of our canon being in terms of the bubble that I keep referring to? And that is a lot of Chicano art and Chicano education in terms of the canon of academia and the starting of these departments, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the people I admire and that have been around for a while are people that come from that Chicano movement, you know, in the 60s and the 70s also, just talking about, just like the civil rights movement, right? This gave birth to a lot of these old school professors we have nowadays. People that actually don't like the word Latinx, just to, you know, like, because they're older. They're like, what the fuck is this Latinx shit? So, and I always get a kick out of that.
Yeah, no, that was a good clarification. He's going to profit off of this. It's his private collection. He's donating, and people are going to have to pay admissions to see his collection.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that the museum is expected to make $3 million annually based off of the attendance that the museum already has. I assume that there's going to be some language in that contract that says, you know, like, I get a percentage.
Maybe I think better of him, but I don't even think it's about that. I think it's about him wanting to... I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, obviously. I don't know the man. I'm thinking he wants to expand the story of his culture. And that's a dope endeavor. I'm just like, there's a lot of us that don't have the same opportunity. And, you know, what language are you using to, like, do all this, you know? Mm-hmm. So whether he's profiting in that way that you're talking about, I have no idea. I actually think that his intentions are well, you know what I mean? Like, are good. They're just limited. And when we're talking about this, I just want to be a little more specific as to who it's going to benefit or spotlight, let's say. And internationally speaking, and I would even argue New York speaking, I'm very much a New York centric person, but internationally speaking, I'd argue that, you know, the culture I come from needs more representation in terms of our contributions to this country, our demographics in terms of this country, our history with this country, and so on. You know, I'll bring up a lot of the other ones that I never hear of. You know, Ecuador was the third largest group of Spanish speakers up until about 10 years ago, when the Mexican population in terms of numbers overtook the Ecuadorian. Now, you would never know that by looking at art in museums in New York, by looking at curriculums in art in classrooms. You wouldn't know that Ecuadorians were so relevant to New York culture in terms of numbers. But we know that about Mexicans, even though Mexicans are one of the latest growing diaspora in New York. Literally, in terms of big numbers, they're the latest. But you would think by going to museums and seeing curriculums in classrooms and stuff like that, that Mexico is this old school ethnic group in New York. So I want to learn more about Guatemalan art. I want to learn more about these other groups that don't get shine. And a lot of the times it's because they're poorer and smaller. And where's the equity in us viewing that art through a different lens and not always comparing it to the Frida Kahlos and the Diego Riveras?
I'm remembering the Radical Women. I don't know if you saw that, the Radical Women exhibit at the Brooklyn Museum. It's supposed to be like this massive survey. There wasn't that much representation of Dominican or Afro-Latino women. Is it another form of Trojan horse, but now with gender? In this example.
No, I think it's exactly the same. It's exactly the same. And I remember that Radical Women show. I can't say that I remember the show exactly, but I remember specifically, I'll call her a mentor, but you know, somebody I look up to a lot, Dr. Malta Morena Vega, that was one of the, she was the second director of El Museo del Barrio, and she also started the Caribbean Cultural Center African Diaspora Institute. She was included in that show, and there was a piece that she made. Now, she'll tell you herself, she didn't even think that thing existed anymore. She was never an artist. It was something she was doing as kick, some public program thing where she made a drawing of herself. And they looked for that. Now, I'm just talking shit now, okay? I don't know this specifically. But the thing is, things like this happen. So let me break for a second. I used to work at Mad Museum, Museum of Art and Design. And they did this like survey, or there was this like this collection of 70s clothing and stuff like that. They bought a daishiki on Etsy and included it in the show. Why do you think they did that? Because they didn't have anything. I think they got some pretty cool daishiki. I think it was like an old daishiki, just to give them a little credit. But this is ridiculous. And the reason why I know is because it was fessed up to us. You know, I was an educator there. They used to do the walk arounds. I don't work there anymore. I don't care. That institution was racist. And it started with the docents, those old ladies that would give money to the museum. And they would look at me up and down. I hated it. I got stories about that. But anyway, I've been thinking about adding to change the museum soon. It's just, I'm so lazy, I don't type things. Going back to the story, they told us, they were like, yeah, you know, there's not a lot of Black stuff in this show. We tried to add Black stuff. So this is what we did. And literally, they were saying it like it was some kind of good thing they did. And like a couple of us were like, oh God, this is so cringeworthy, right? Anyway, I suspect they looked for that Marta Morena Vega piece. I'm no curators. I've been a little curator and trying to find different identities to try to play that game. And sometimes you do it badly, sometimes you do it good. But we're in a position where if we do something and something's missing, there's gonna be somebody that says, what about this identity? Or what about that identity? To a certain degree, that's what I'm doing here. But you know, I suspect to a certain degree that they kind of looked very hard to find a Black woman that they can add to this show, because the show was very Chicano. And it goes back, and I can't say this with any clarity. I remember thinking more about it when it was out. It was like a point of, it was part of my little rant, because I talk about this all the time working where I work, right? The Radical Women show is a product of who was collecting and then who curated the show. What are they pulling from? And then what history do they come from? Everybody's gonna, you know, like we're humans and we're gonna try, we come with these instilled things to like, you know, big up the culture we come from. So that gets back to the fact that a lot of academia in terms of like passing down. So the comparison that I made about, you know, my master printer being this Dominican dude named Pepe, but him being trained by Sam Coronado. And then there's this whole line that connects this print shop of mostly Dominicans and Caribbeans in general, that mostly are concentrating on Caribbean art and issues, having this connection to this Chicano lineage. The same thing happens in academia, where these professors, you know what I mean? Like your mentor might be this older, you know, professor. And at a certain point of time, even though they were low in numbers, the main crux of Latino educators in terms of academia and you know, high education, we're Chicano. You see this trickle down into what we do. And you know, like the more I talk about it, you know, and think about it, in a way, there's nothing wrong with that. That's just the natural way things happen. I think we just need to do a better job at naming things for what they are and being more diverse, right? In terms of naming things and looking into things and being brave and being like, you know, all right, Mexicans, we're here too, or all right, white Latinos, you know what I mean? Like, you know, because it's multi-layered. I brought up Cuba before. I think that there's this fetishization, even though they make good art, but there's also this romanticization of their art because of the forbidden fruit thing, right? Like they've been so kind of like isolated, and we've had this kind of separation between the countries that there's this mystique almost. And that's definitely been fetishized by especially white people. It turns into an advantage in terms of art sales, representation in shows and collections and blah, 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 like we've been talking about all along.
Now that you say that, like academia is prized, like that's what's accepted, right? People who get hired have to have an education, have to have a master's or PhD degree. As someone who is also pursuing an arts degree, you know, what can I do as someone who's interested in museum studies to do better by the communities for people who probably don't have that education background? You said yourself, you entered into this space, but through a side door, you sometimes have that imposter feeling, but like, how can I kind of connect with you?
I think you're doing it right now by giving me a platform to talk on and listening to me, right? Like that's number one, getting in a position where you can do more than what you're doing right now. And to keep that open mind towards looking in the directions that are seldomly looked in is dope. Now, specifically about me, you know, like I do think that there is a segment somewhat of like art. I'm Dominican and I'm Puerto Rican, but like I'm hip hop, right? Like I was able to choose something, right? I had no choice in being Dominican or Puerto Rican. You just born that. When I came to age, I had a decision on what music I listened to, what kind of history I wanted to learn about, things like that. And I'm very much like hip hop. And when it comes to graffiti, right, like a you know, like an aesthetic that I come from, let's say, you know, like there has been a little bit more room for us to come in with less formal education, because you know, but it's also fetishized, right? Like, you know, un tigre, that dude from the street, you know what I mean? Of course, he's not going to have an education, even though at this point there are more educated, you know, people that are working in academia that come from hip hop, especially at first, like a lot of people were entering without that. And I know some people that have been able to, you know, be given like honorary degrees and so on. But, you know, even beyond that, like when it comes to teaching artist gig, I'm always one of the few, if not the only, as a matter of fact, I'll stick to the only, to be honest with you, artist that has no formal education except for dropping out of LaGuardia Music and Art, in my case, working in the places that I'm working at. But the thing is, I know so many people that are able to offer more. And it goes beyond, like, I know people that are able to write, you know, curriculums that are dope because they have close to a fucking doctorate. But can they perform that in the classroom? Mm. No, but they can write it really good. They can write it really good. But I can do that in the classroom. I just mm-hmm. can't write it well. And I would like to see a breakdown more in terms of, you know, and it's hard because some of us are really busting our ass to do this, right? Like, you know, I have a mom that has 3 master's degrees and busted her ass and went to school. So I understand some people being like, oh, fuck Carlos. I've never shown at this place, you know what I mean? Or whatever, whatever. And that's a different conversation altogether. But I think there's a lot of people out there that through lived experience, right? And the art that they're making, and not only that, the community they come from, their experience, their connection to the community should be in a lot of these positions. If you're ever in the position to hire somebody like me, to look in the direction of somebody like me instead of that ultra overachiever that did all the right things academically. Or they're stuck in these universities writing about the hoods that surround the universities, but not being in the hood. It's like poverty porn to a different degree.
One other subject I want to talk about is sort of the colorism that exists within Latinidad. And now you have all these museums and exhibitions that have been kind of creeping up every once in a while that talk about sort of like, you know, a survey of Latin American art, show like the breadth of collection.
I wonder, so, you know, once again, I'll do this in a story. Marta Morena Vega, to go back to her, when she was the second director of El Museo del Barrio, she put together this show about Loíza in Puerto Rico. Loíza, for those that might not know, is Afro-Boricua corridor in San Juan. It's a place where the culture, but also like physically people are kind of located. This impoverished area right by the water, you know, and it's like part of San Juan, but it's almost like going to a different community altogether. She put together a show about that. There's an interview you can look up where she talks about it. But she talks about how Puerto Ricans were coming in angry, talking about this isn't Puerto Rico. It was black faces. And that's what I'm arguing that I want to see more of. I wonder mm-hmm. if Riverside will have that moment where maybe, you know, their third show will be, once again, to bring up a place like Veracruz, you know, Mexico, where they have a black history, right? All of Mexico has a black history, but in terms of concentration, right? It's one of the blacker areas in terms of that history. Will they spotlight these things? Mm-hmm. Will they give attention, spotlight, and talk about these things? Or will it be the popular canon? Or, you know, even if it's Chicano, forget about it. Why am I talking about, you know, Mexico, right? Chicanos, United States, you know, people of Mexican descent. Are we going to talk about Black Mexicans, you know, and the history of Black Mexicans in Los Angeles, for instance? That's a history right there. There's a history about that. Are they going to do, you know, a study on something like that and then do like an exhibit? Those are the kind of things I want to see more of. But you tell me, you know, you're going to see more Chicano printmaking. Okay, I've seen a lot of it. And every time El Museo does some kind of retrospective or something, there's always Chicano prints mm-hmm. in this Puerto Rican institution. I know a lot about Chicano print just by working at El Museo del Barrio. I don't know if that answers the question, but yeah, I just wonder if it's going to be the normal canon of, or if they're going to dig deep into these identities that aren't talked about a lot. But I'm a troll. I always want to hear things like that. I'm like that dude, like, yeah, man, I'm down. Let's talk about immigration here. But I also want to know how Guatemalan, you know, Mexicans are treated in Mexico. I'm just that dude that, you know, asks those questions and want to talk about it. So maybe that's just my personality. I don't know.
I definitely want to see that, too. I think as you said, like the canon is to show what's familiar for a white audience. Well, do you have any sort of final thoughts?
I think I rambled most of the things that I'm thinking about, to be honest with you. I think it's a great conversation to have, because I think we need to dig deeper in terms of pressuring these institutions and stuff on who they're going to collect. When somebody says, I have Latino artists, well, where are these Latino artists from? That's a Trojan horse. That's that's saying nothing in a way. That's saying that them or their parents might speak a romance language. That's it. That goes. That doesn't go any further to talk about inclusivity in terms of race, gender, thought process. You know what I mean? Like anything like that. We have Latino artists.
This has been A Guide to Art, Activism, and Culture, a podcast from the Eric Graham Center for Arts and Culture. I've been your host, Zoe Elena Moldenhauer. Join us on our next episode, and in the meantime, visit our website at www.eregraham.org or follow us on social media at Eric Graham Arts to learn about opportunities, events, and more for artists and writers.